Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Episode of Out of the Trenches podcast. I have four guests on today, three on right now, and I have one more that's joining. I'm going to do a quick intro. From episode number 5, I have Jen Molichpour. She is a speaker and author of The Happy Teacher's Handbook, From Overwhelmed to Inspired, Helping Teachers Embrace Resiliency. She is a first-year principal at a 4th and 5th grade campus. Find Jen on Twitter at Teacher Renegade. From episode number 31, Brad Hughes, he's an elementary school principal in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. And Brad recently launched his own podcast, Good News, Brad News, on Anchor FM. Follow him on Twitter at Brad_Hughes. From episode 34, Brandon Beck will be joining us in a little bit. He is the author of Unlocking Unlimited Potential, Understanding the Infinite Power Within to Guide Any Student Towards Success. He has been a dual language teacher at the elementary level for 15 years. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonBeckEDU. And from an upcoming episode yet to be published is Chris Dodge. He is the principal of the Orange Elementary Schools in Orange, Massachusetts, currently serving 500 students in grades pre-K through 6. He is a connected educator who utilizes social media to make family and community connections. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at PrincipalDodge1. Welcome to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dana. Great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I had a little bit of technical difficulty getting started. So if anybody's watching this live, hopefully you're able to join us. But otherwise, you can see the recording. So I wanted you guys to just kind of, you're all at the same level, elementary level and principals. So I wanted you guys to provide a snapshot of kind of what's going on in your school right now, your current situation, if you're hybrid remote, if you're transitioning to a model, and how's that been for you so far? And I'll start with Jen, because it's been a while since I've talked to you.
Hi. So we were just kind of catching up before we jumped in. We've been full in person since the start of the year. Mm-hmm. However, there have been times we've had to shut down and go remote. Like there were 2 weeks I had fifth grade that was all remote, just fifth grade out of the district. Mm-hmm. And then in December, we shut the district down just because of staffing reasons. We can't get subs. Subs mm-hmm. are like a hot commodity right now. So right now, our goal is just to stay open. We've noticed a huge gap, just divide in the kids when they're remote. I have half my population that doesn't grow, doesn't engage, mm-hmm. doesn't attend. And so that's been super challenging for us. Right now, you know, since January, we've been full in person. Haven't had to go remote yet. So we're just, I always feel like we're kind of teetering. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you guys have learned a lot along the way, right?
Holy.
Yeah. And Brad, how about you up in Canada? How's that been?
Yeah, right now schools in our district, Dana, are open face-to-face. We have two models. One is in person and the other is full distance learning. And so our schools in our district and really across the province of Ontario were closed since January the 4th. Certain districts with low COVID transmission numbers were given permission to reopen on a rolling basis. Our district got permission to open along with most districts in the province this past Monday. So it's almost like restarting the school year. In the meantime, we've got kids whose families have indicated that they would like to change their mode of learning, either returning to school in person or switching out of the in-person school to full remote again. So we're managing mm-hmm. all of those transitions at the same time as you know, we've got hundreds of teachers and thousands of students in our district and in our province that are participating in full remote learning. So it's been a constant challenge to manage and support family expectations, student engagement, mm-hmm. Teacher capacity, and anyway, we've really dug in, and so you know, couldn't be prouder of our staff and or more grateful to our families for supporting as much as they can with the kids learning at home.
Mm-hmm. Great. And Chris, when I interviewed you in November, you guys were remote. So what are you guys doing right now in Massachusetts?
So my district is still remote, though Monday night our district voted to go to a hybrid model starting on March 1st. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing this remote thing for a long time. I think my staff are ready for it. I think it's been a year for us, mm-hmm. and we're all kind of tired. Like Brad, I think my staff have just been so incredible and so flexible. It feels like every day, I mean, this job in a typical year, we're making about 1,000 decisions mm-hmm. in a day. And this year is no joke. I mean, I feel like, I don't know if there's a thing like called decision fatigue, but I feel like I've hit that. I see the principal's nodding. But we've done a ton of things in our district around getting all of our kids' devices, connections, Wi-Fi connections. We've developed support processes to make sure our students have what they need. And if there are any students who are falling through the cracks, we make sure we intervene quickly. We've developed something called a Remote Learning Academy, which is for kids who might not be engaging. And so we bring them in temporarily, teach them the skills to be independent remote learners, and then send them back out and hope that those skills transfer. Mm-hmm. But we're certainly excited to get back into to see more kids in our buildings. It's going to be a lot of work, but I think it's been a long time coming, and I think we're ready, you know, whatever that might mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we kind of have across the board here, right? Somebody who's been in the building all year, Brad's kind of gone in and out, and Chris is coming in a few weeks. So I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about any approaches that you've had to show staff appreciation and decrease staff burnout since the spring semester started. So we had that time to, have that time off, you know, reset in January. And I see that Brandon is in, so I'm going to add him to the stream. Hello, Brandon. How are you doing?
Good. How you doing, everybody?
Good. So I introduced you when we started the live stream, and I just asked the question. We're doing a discussion now on approaches to show staff appreciation. And since you're in the classroom, you can also, Brandon, talk a little bit about something that's been in your building to help decrease staff burnout as well. So anybody can take that away and we can have a discussion around that.
I can get things rolling just by saying that our approach has been really try to keep things as simple and clear as we can. Mm-hmm. Staff morale and staff capacity depends on everybody's, you know, energy and ability to manage the gap between ever increasing expectations and our actual capacity to fulfill them. And so we have really tried to simplify and clarify all kinds of information coming from our province, from our district, and within our school, so that everyone feels clear on how they can support each other, how they can support kids, what the next best decision is. And as far as, you know, keeping staff morale up, you know, all of us here know just how to leverage the power of connection, just staying in touch however we can, mm-hmm. Whether it's scheduled meetings, infrequent check-ins, just keeping things casual, positive, focused on support. Because when there's all kinds of expectations on us, you know, the danger for staff members is to feel that they're in a constant state of supervision, especially mm-hmm. since we're all maybe remote. And so just providing that sort of soothing reassurance that we're all there to support one another, and just keep coming back to two questions. What do you need and how can I help? And if you keep asking those questions again, and you actually kind of have to pause and wait for the real answer, because it's one thing to say, how you doing? I'm fine. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. But really, no, how are you doing? Really, what do you need? And really, how can I help? And give people a chance to think about that and then get back to you. That's been, you know, rather as opposed to, say, discrete events or like any kind of it's rather than a gestural approach, it's more of a cultural approach that we've taken on. And like I said in the opening, so proud of how staff have rallied. So looking forward to hearing from you guys too.
Well, I would just add on to that, because I think Brad and I are kind of leading in similar ways. I think, you know, we always do the small events to show appreciation, but I think more of what we've done as a school staff is developed a culture where I would like to think that we've embraced the suck, meaning like we've I'd like to think that we have a culture where it's okay to say this is really hard, mm-hmm. right? And so at the beginning of this year, we started our staff meetings with, like, tell us how you're feeling, make a self-care plan for yourself, because that's really important, and go back to it when you need it. But more than anything, like, ask us for what you need when you need it. And it's okay to say this is really hard. And we're here to help, not give you more things to do. I understand that this is hard. It's hard for us. It's hard, and we don't have the answers. So I think that's another piece of this is, like, I'm okay saying to my staff, I don't know the answer to that. I don't mm-hmm. know. And with hybrid coming for us, it's like, I'm getting a million questions a minute. And I think as leaders, we just have to be okay saying, you know what, I don't really know. This is new for us. No one in this room took principal in a pandemic in college. So we're all kind of doing this. And I think that's great. I think that's actually good. I think it ties us together and unites us in this, like, all in it together kind of feel. So I'd like to think the same thing, that we've built this collaborative culture where we were headed towards something that prepared us for this as much mm-hmm. as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with all of that. You know, as when we started, we were unsure if we would make it to October mm-hmm. staying in person. And so every day that we would make it every week, it would be like, you know, another notch on the belt, like, oh, we've made it this far. And now we just all have this collective feeling of, we're going to do whatever it takes to be in person, because that's what's best for kids right now, at least our population. And so we have rallied around each other to support each other as much as we can. I was doing quite a bit of teaching, I think, in the first semester, supporting teachers as needed. We had a new math curriculum to start this year, which is like, I think it's that whole village, and I've said it to parents too. We're all in this together. We're all trying to support your kids. So tell me what you need. I did a live with parents for our community. It was a Google Meet that was live. And I had a grandparent sitting in her bathroom on the bathtub where she could get reception, and she's holding her phone, and she is so desperate to mm-hmm. learn how to take care of her child and make sure that she's learning. I mean, so crazy things that we've never, like, in a normal year would never be thinking about. I mean, we're just, I think I'm impressed and proud of that we are embracing that whole village approach to get these kids learning. And the thing I think that's come up more so than ever this year is the social emotional piece of these children. Mm-hmm. And so many are bringing stuff from home and worry and panic and just lots of things. And so I'm doing just a lot of checking in with teachers. How can I support these kids so that they're ready to learn? And if they're not, if we can't address those needs and they're not learning, you know, how can we support them in other ways? So that's been one of our huge challenges. And I think, you know, in my staff meetings at the end, I do a staff shout out. Like, who can we give a shout out to today? Like, who could we acknowledge? And I think that just breeds more of, like, oh gosh, and I also want to recognize so-and-so. And so I think it's just that positive, we can do this, that whole collective teacher efficacy, that whole, like, we don't know, but we're working towards something good, you know, mm-hmm. at the end. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just pick up right there. The power of positivity is definitely something that, you know, I know that my administrators have been practicing, and I know that we're kind of carrying with us, because, you know, as a teacher, I am a leader, but I'm also, you know, I'm a teacher, I'm a classroom teacher, and I have to really shout out, I mean, my administrator, my principal, our superintendent, has just been really amazing. And it goes back to what you were just saying, Jen, about social emotional learning. I keep finding myself saying this, that, like, it took us a pandemic for us to mm-hmm. finally look in the mirror and say, now is the time for social emotional learning to be at the forefront, mental health to be at the forefront of everything we're doing. And I think that's a silver lining in it all, because these are really challenging times and really difficult times. And it's a super complicated environment to teach in. I happen to teach in a school district that has a, you know, 60% Hispanic Latino with a large, large population of free and reduced lunch. And, you know, for those students, they're struggling. And the support's not necessarily there at home. The main language at home is not always English. And so it's really challenging, but I can see my district is doing everything they can. You know, communication has been top notch. Mm-hmm. And I think what's also the important word for me is the word patience, right? I think as administrators, and what my principal I've noticed with her is that she's just been so patient with all of us and understanding, you know, like you said, Chris, like there's no textbook for this. There's no class mm-hmm. for this. There's no answer for how this is all going to work best. And I think every teacher and I think every classroom has a lot of their own techniques and a lot of things that work specifically for them. And I think that that's a benefit to it all. And I think we've kind of been able to push a little bit away from some of the standardization and some of the standardized assessments and take a real look in the mirror and say, like, what really matters? And what does really matter at the end of it all is relationships. And what are we doing to cultivate relationships? And I know my school, they added in, and I'm an elementary teacher, they added in a 45-minute period every single day that was taken away from other subjects that's considered community building. So there's your mm-hmm. social emotional learning time. So it's guaranteed, it's there. And teachers have the freedom to use it how they want to use it to build those relationships. So I gotta give a lot of respect and really return to, you know, having that patience and also giving yourself that grace to keep strides and keep working, pushing forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like how you guys have all kind of taken your own approach to this. And a lot of what resonates for all of you are the social emotional pieces. And I've worked mostly with kids at the secondary level, and you're all at elementary, and I really see, you know, my own kids who are kindergarten, grade 5 and grade 7, you know, the need, you know, of that social emotional piece, the connections, especially, you know, when things are uncertain, right? I wanted to switch a little bit to the teacher evaluation piece, and I talked a lot with Chris about this on our podcast recording, but just a little bit about some of the coaching conversations, observations, kind of what you guys have been doing this year, and Brandon, how you've been observed, and takeaways about maybe improving upon your coaching and observation methods these last 3 or more months of the school year.
I don't mind going first. I mean, I guess I've become a better coach this year, or at least I would like to think that I've been a better coach, because the thing hanging over my head, the paperwork, I kind of let go this year, mm-hmm. like, because our evaluation system is, I bet a lot like a lot of people's, it's a check off the boxes kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I have so many people to get through that it doesn't get to the real value of coaching and improving practice. And so this year, without that there, I can say, and without knowing that I don't know, how can I evaluate a teacher when I've never taught remotely? Like, mm-hmm. I can't come to this conversation with, here's what I need to see. I've come to the conversation with, tell me what I just saw. What didn't I see? Tell me more about this. And so more of those reflective questions. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned, I think, more than I've gained. And what has been really nice is I'm then able to bring those to other teachers and say, you know, I just saw a teacher down the hall. She's doing this awesome thing with this tool. Check it out. Building those connections. So it really has brought me to a place of what I've always wanted it to be, which is more, let me learn from you. Let me listen to what's going well, what's hard. Mm-hmm. How can I help you? And it's that vulnerable conversation where a teacher can then feel okay saying, you know, I'm really struggling with this. Because those walls of I know this and I'm here to see this are kind of gone. I feel like that's led to a more productive, more trusting conversation where a teacher is going to be more open with me rather than if they were with just a coach, colleague. Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I'm always the, you know, the supervisor and I'm the principal. But I think this has led to more productive conversations, and I've really made it a goal to be in classrooms just as much, even though virtual, and just to kind of see what's going on, because I can't, how can I make decisions based for my staff if I'm not there to see what they're doing every day? And it grounds me just seeing what they're doing. I mean, being in a kindergarten class, it's teaching remotely. Mm-hmm. I just you know, it just, it really floors me the things that I've seen our educators do. And I'm just always so in gratitude and respect so much the things that they're doing, because, you know, I tell them all the time, I have no idea how you're doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you are in our schools. If you're a first year teacher, I don't have one, I respect for those people, because I don't know if I would have made it out alive my first mm-hmm. year in a remote setting. So it's really just, if anything, brought me to a better place to really understand where my teachers are and what they need, and really respect the profession even more than I already have, because they're just doing it, and I'm just really proud.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my teachers are carrying this burden of wanting to be the teachers they've always been and moving kids yeah. a full grade level.
Yeah.
And they carry that every day, and they yeah. see the discrepancy. We had our whole basketball team quarantined, so we have kids out for 2 weeks and random kids out all the time. Mm-hmm. And so to try to keep up with that in person, and who's behind, and how, and who's joining me remotely today, and who do I, you know, who do I need to check in, and who's leaving tomorrow? And it's been really hard, and we get our map data back. And so we're having data conversations. And I just went into it with, okay, we're going to talk about data, but mm-hmm. it's not going to be, oh my gosh, you need to be doing this better. This, you know, it's going to be just, what are we noticing, and what can we do to support some kids? Let's not even look at the whole class just yet. Let's just pick a couple that we can move a little, you know, and what does that kid need? And why did they drop 12 points? Like, what's going on? Is there something else we can do? And if you've been beating your head against a wall all year long with this one kid doing this thing, what if we got together and tried a different approach? So not more, just let's do something different to try and support that kid. So our conversations are different, and it's always gentle, I feel like, you know, and there's no pressure for me to say, you need to be moving this, or what is this test score? And I keep telling them, the test scores are telling us what's going on in the world right now. So it's kind of a temperature check, and it's telling us it's not working right now, and it's not due to you. Mm-hmm. You're gonna keep learning and growing. We're surviving right now. Keep doing it. Let me support you. And take a deep breath, because we'll get to the other side. It's just, mm-hmm. it's not gonna be the same. So I just feel like our conversations are they're more personal. How are you? You know, not as much as, you know, show me how you engaged your children and what your average ticket, exit tickets were today. You know, it's much more of a gentle nature, I think, this year.
Yeah.
You know, I think in general, the foundation of any teacher evaluation or any kind of evaluation that we do in any aspect of education has to be founded on assuming capacity and assuming competency from the outset. The challenge is, with any evaluation process, there may be the assumption on the person that we're evaluating is that we don't presume that they're competent or capable, and that we're sort of, it's a process of fault finding and sort of a gotcha process. So I'm really grateful that for the most part, all of our standard or I guess required teacher evaluations have been suspended. Because let's face it, the teacher evaluation process, if you're a school leader or a teacher, all of those look fors, all of those competencies, yeah, there are core competencies that should be transferable between in-person, distance, hybrid, but they're all founded on the assumption that the administrator is observing and supporting the teacher within his or her own classroom, within a learning environment that's co-constructed between the teacher and the students. And so when all of that is disrupted and interrupted, there's tremendous stress, and you layer on that stress of, now my principal's coming in and popping into my virtual classroom to evaluate me. To me, that's not on, and that doesn't reflect the professionalism of our teachers. The other thing that has really been clear to me, guys, is how this experience has decentralized the administrator teacher pipeline. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about evaluation, everything good that's happened in terms of our shifts between remote, virtual, distance, in person, all of it has been on the backs of our educators with our support and coaching. It really has decentralized us as so-called instructional leaders or instructional experts. The experts are all over. The experts are within our network. And so mm-hmm. as an evaluator, what I've, you know, on a sort of an ongoing basis, rather than being an evaluator and an expert, my my goal has been to connect other great professionals doing other great things to build the capacity of everyone. So right now, the only thing that's proceeding is required evaluations for new teachers. And again, just like Jen and Chris said, it's about being gentle. It's about assuming capacity and capability, and assuming that you're coming in to reflect. And I tell my teachers, I'm coming in to reflect back to you the great things that I see and to answer your questions about how to get better. I had a teacher ask me today, do you want to know about my students' individual learning profiles? You know, who's having trouble, who might be? I said, no, it's enough for me to know that you know who they are. And what I'm going to be doing when I'm doing my classroom visit is I'm going to be watching you work your magic, and I'm going to watch you manage and adjust your instruction to meet the needs of the kids that are right in front of you. And so if you put that out there first, that I assume that you're competent and capable, and I assume that you're going to do great, then that can relieve a lot of the associated tensions. Interested to hear, Brandon, about your perspective too, as a teacher, and what your colleagues are experiencing in terms of evaluation.
Yeah, and those are all valid points that you're all making, and I appreciate the perspective. I really do. I actually have an informal observation tomorrow, so this is kind of on the tip of my tongue right now. And it's funny, when I started my doctorate program, I started out in the avenue of thinking that I was going to be studying teacher evaluation. And that, I read a book from Linda Darlin Hambin called Getting Evaluation Right. And I completely changed my perspective. I thought I was going to change the world with teacher evaluation. And as I read it and I saw it, I was like, well, you know, what is the purpose, right? What is the purpose of any evaluation right now and during this time? Is the, like you're saying, it sounds like what I'm hearing from all of you is that the purpose of your evaluations is to support and to empower your educators. And I think that's really a powerful thing, because we're kind of removing that, in where I am in New York, we're kind of removing a little bit that state assessment score mm-hmm. attached to an evaluation of a teacher, which to me is just unfair, because no matter what way you slice it, no matter what way you set it up, your students are still going to face certain challenges. And those students who may necessarily be down here and grow to here, which to me is like massive growth, when they're put up against all the other kids in the state, it's not going to show the same bar. It's not going to be the same level. So I really think, you know, you have to return to the purpose of the evaluation, and the purpose of the evaluation here, what's really come out of this pandemic has, you know, it's released some of that anxiety. It's released some of that anxiety from the administrator side of it. And it's also released some of that anxiety from the teacher side of it. I always look at evaluations as it's an opportunity to fail. Mm-hmm. And I've always looked at it. I've always looked at it for the past 20 years I've been as an educator. But what I've noticed is a lot of other educators, they don't necessarily start to feel that way once scores are starting to be attached to performance. Because who's to say having good relationships is better than being super organized and having, you know, your objectives, you know, listed, or a really decorated and really well-organized classroom? You know, who's to say which of those, you know, kind of things? I know Ronald Ferguson out of Harvard, he uses the seven C's, right? You know, mm-hmm. care and all of those different kind of important things that are important to making sure what education and what educators are doing in the classroom. So I think it goes back to all that. And I always try to look at it through that lens. Like, and I always approach, I actually sent an email to my principal today, like, hey, I'm going to do a lesson for you tomorrow, and I'm going to do a lesson for you tomorrow that I'm struggling with. And I'm going to do it because I want your feedback so that you can help me grow. And she's like, Brandon, a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people, mm-hmm. you know, they don't have that confidence. And I think that if the educators aren't having that confidence, I think there's something wrong with the system. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's how I feel about evaluation. I just think it needs to, if we can use this opportunity of this pandemic to help teachers grow in the right direction, and maybe this is kind of our window to make that happen. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that, you know, that's something that will stick.
Yeah.
If I can, I just wanted to jump in and say that's one of the golden opportunities that we have is to look for opportunities amid all of the adversity and all of the challenge. It's to look for opportunities to challenge systems that aren't working as well as they could. And all of us are called to do things that we're called to do. But it is essential that when you see opportunities to challenge what you're called to do, mm-hmm. if it doesn't work situationally, if it doesn't work to support relationships, but above all, like we would never do anything to kids or with kids that diminishes their own sense of success and efficacy. Why on earth would we do that to any of our educators? And so if we find ourselves in a position where we feel we're being called to do that, we need to challenge that. We need to change that up. And amid a global pandemic, yeah, so much is not working, but so much depends on us taking opportunities to grow from what we're experiencing.
Well, I think, Brad, like you, just in the conversation the three of us had before this happened, we were already talking about like how this is going to help us rethink some of the things that we've been doing for so many years that mm-hmm. like we just can't break out of the industrial model of education. Like mm-hmm. I think Dana, you and I talked about it, was like, this could be our opportunity. I hope we seize it. I hope mm-hmm. we come out of this by really taking good care of our educators, focusing on social emotional learning and mental health. I hope that we think outside of how we rate and judge schools based on a metric that doesn't reflect what a school does or what they deem is important. I think there's just a lot of good that could come out of it. I don't know if you all are seeing this, and Brandon, maybe you're seeing this amongst your colleagues. Even with all that support, what is a little sad to me is that, like, Jen, you made me think about this. My teachers still are equating this. They're still thinking through that old lens mm-hmm. and beating themselves up so much. I'm meeting with first year teachers who just keep saying to me, I'm not doing enough. I'm not meeting my kids' needs. I'm not getting there. There is a wealth of just teachers, they're just putting themselves down at every turn. And I don't know whether that's just because we're all kind of type A's and we really like to, you know, we want to do a good job, or if it's just the system we've been in that we are kind of trained to think that way or always believe we're not enough. And that to me is really disappointing. And I wish we could do better for them.
I think part of it is this teacher ownership, which I love. You know, they love their kids. They love teaching. They want to be awesome for kids, right? They want to grow their kids. And I love that part. I love where it's stemming from. And it's how do we help them let go of some of that pressure? Because this is unheard of right now. And I mean, I can keep saying, and I keep saying, I said, like, I'm telling you, I'm not holding you up to here. I see you caring. I see you putting in long hours. I see you calling home and doing all these crazy things to engage kids. I see it. And you're doing a wonderful job. And it's okay that we're not going to bring them up to here this year. So I'm not sure how else to do that. Brandon, help us with that.
Yeah, I think it's got, because I was just having a conversation with someone about this. It's got to be deeper than that, because it doesn't matter how many times I say it. Me saying to a teacher, let it go, it's internal. So there's got to be something, whether about the our personalities as educators or just the system we're in, but there's something deeper that is not allowing our teachers to feel like they're not doing enough, even when they're doing miles more than what they are called.
Yeah, and I'm certain it's a system. It's a system that we've inherited. It's a system that we are a part of, and we even contribute to sometimes unknowingly, and that is a narrative of not enough, a narrative of scarcity, and certainly teachers and educators are not alone in the fact that often service professions and service vocations are often least understood, and they're often most undervalued. Both in terms of esteem by communities, by leaders, by, you know, the general public, but also in terms of remuneration. We all on this screen and everyone listening, we have an opportunity to challenge that narrative. And as educators, we want to be servers. We want to make sure we're doing right by somebody, whether it's right by the principal, right by our colleagues, right by our parents, but above all, right by the kids. And a lot of our systems are founded on fear and worry of getting it wrong. And so a colleague recently encouraged me, and I've been sharing this out, is at times like this, and then going forward, we want to make a shift from address, from shift and focus from gaps to growth, because it's really, really natural that we're going to be worried about learning loss, what's not being covered, what's not being addressed. But if we keep on that narrative, we are ignoring any of the growth that may be occurring, growth in ourselves as educators, as school leaders, as caregivers, as family members, as community members. But let's take a look at the growth that the kids are demonstrating. The kids along with us are all surviving a pandemic. And, you know, forget about a playbook, as, you know, as Chris mentioned, there not only is there no playbook, we are writing history. We are actively writing history, and we are writing and rewriting our approaches to education. Like we are in the heart of a deeply creative time right now. And so if we can, if we have colleagues that are feeling desperate and are feeling diminished, if we can shift the focus, if we can shift the focus to growth rather than gaps, challenge people. What has your growth been? What are you learning to do now that you have never had the opportunity before? What are you creating? Like, what are you bringing into existence that never existed yesterday, but is existing today because you're meeting the needs of the kids right in front of you today? So shifting that narrative from gaps to growth has been on my lips recently.
Well, as we wrap this up, I wanted everybody to mention a tip that they could share with leaders or any educators to remember from our conversation, to take with them for the remainder of the school year on the topics that we've discussed with just your current model of learning and the teacher evaluations and observations. So Brandon, do you have a tip that you would like to start out with?
My tip is super simple: get out of your own way. And I think that's kind of the theme that I'm generating from this conversation, right? Mm-hmm. We aren't measuring ourselves based on what we did in the past. What we did in the past is not now. This is completely different environment. And I think when we find ourselves going back into that place in our heads where we're like, well, this was different last year, and you know, the kid is here one day and the kid is not here the next day, mm-hmm. and now I'm managing, you know, you have to have that flexibility and that patience. And that statement that I find myself, you know, always saying is, I am doing my best for mm-hmm. these kids. And I think if you have that mantra or some sort of statement in your head that allows you not to follow those self-limiting beliefs down the hill, I think you're going to find yourself really pushing forward. I think inside of us, we all have that, you know, that ability to be able to rise above this and understand that, hey, as long as you're putting it in there and you're doing your best and you're getting, you know, you're getting what you can out of these students. And to be honest, you might even be getting a little something more. Like in a hybrid setting where I'm teaching, I got 6 or 7 kids in my classroom. Like, that's kind of a unique situation. Mm-hmm. That's an opportunity that I can use with those students in front of me. And even though I have those other kids at home on a computer, there's opportunities. The fact of how technologically savvy these kids have become, and how, you know, a year ago we couldn't get parents on a Zoom call. A year ago we couldn't even get kids to open up an email that were 9, 10, 11 years old. And just trying to focus on all the growth, like Brad is saying, all the growth is an opportunity for us to keep pushing forward. And the future has to be bright, because the future is the only place we're going.
Yeah.
I'll jump in next. You know, as I hear all of us chatting, I think of I am enough, you know, at the end of the day, like I am enough. And then just asking ourselves at the end of the day, what difference did I make today? Mm-hmm. And finding that little, if it's little, if it's big, because I know that my teachers are making a difference every day. I know. And I think at the end of the day, it doesn't feel like it used to feel like when they made a difference. So it's just finding that one thing. How did I make a difference today? I'm running with it.
Mine was kind of a combination of both of yours. I was going to say, as a leader, get out of your staff's way, because I do think we tend to want to be so helpful that sometimes we inadvertently put more onto our staff. One of the things I learned this year is, like, in an effort to be helpful, I was not being so helpful because I was just giving them more. And they were like, Chris, leave us alone. Like, give us some space, you know? So, and not intentionally, but I think we want to be so helpful, but I think sometimes we just have to like give ourselves and our staff some space. And I think this is the perfect time to like step back and watch, listen, have important conversations. So I think that, and combined with Jen's, I think it's like, give yourself some grace, mm-hmm. you know, leaders and teachers, let's be kind to ourselves and be kind to one another and be real patient with all of this. Cause I think, again, we're just critical of ourselves and we could do a better job of taking care of ourselves and each other.
I just want to come back to something that friend and colleague Ray Hewitt says, and really honor. I really honor this, and that's just is always to strive for today's best. Mm-hmm. And this has been a real resonant thread for all of the staff members that I serve. Is that what you know? As a bottom line, as educators, our best is going to be top notch at any time. We have high expectations of ourselves. We support each other in maintaining those high expectations. So don't get me wrong. I think high and appropriate expectations are what we want to continue to maintain. But depending on your capacity, depending on what you're dealing with, both inside your school and outside in your life, any given day, maybe I'm working at 40% today. I'm giving all I've got, but my 40% is what I've got. Maybe the next day it's 60. Maybe to finish off the week it's 90. But just honor the fact that your ability to meet so-called expectations is going to depend on your capacity. And when there's a mismatch between expectations and capacity, doesn't matter what the expectations are. What matters is that you're giving what you can on that day to serve the kids in front of you, and also to manage to restore your own lost energy so that you can keep going one more round. So that's been resonant with my staff, is focus on today's best. No one can reasonably ask any more of you. And certainly, you know, as leaders and as colleagues, we have to model that. We have to talk that up. Give today's best. Give what you can today. Tomorrow may be different.
Great. You guys all had so many great tips to share. And, you know, this was a wonderful conversation. I thank you guys so much for joining me on this live event. Thanks for being my guest on the podcast in your previous episodes. And I'll, you know, have this link for the recorded session out later today or tomorrow. So I wish you guys all the best. And, I hope listeners get a lot out of learning from your wisdom and your experience and all the great words you have to say.
Congratulations on 50 episodes, by the way. Yeah. It's an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your belief in us and the opportunity to connect with you. Thank you so much, Dana, right. And great to connect with all of you too.
Thanks for bringing us together.
Yeah, this was great.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.